welcome everyone to this week's episode of the Gestalten podcast. My name is Martin Groschwald, and in this week we have a very special guest. He is the chief designer for the Borgward Design Studio here in Germany, in Stuttgart to be exact, who has quite a bit of experience of design as a business, you know, building studios, working with a Chinese background and understanding how important the design department and the general idea of design is within a global corporation. This will be, you know, the episode and interview with Benjamin, in short, Ben Nauka. So please do enjoy the conversation. And of course, also this week's episode is brought to you and sponsored by our lovely little tool that we have created, which is called Pathfinder. Pathfinder allows you to find internships for students, graduates. It will also allow design managers, design studios to find the latest interns, the latest entry-level position graduates to join you in your team, to give you the newest, the latest, the freshest ideas to build up your studio, to develop your studio and making it future-proof for the 21st century. The students or the people that are registered and part of our Pathfinder family do come from all creative universities worldwide. So we have representatives from Germany, from the UK, from the US, from China, from Korea, Japan, you name it. So I'm pretty sure if you're looking for young, fresh talent, you will find it there. And of course, you can also share your latest internship opportunities and entry-level opportunities with the community on Pathfinder. It comes with a 7-day trial period. After that, there is a yearly subscription that you would have to sign off to, but I'm pretty sure that you will find exactly what you need on there if you're looking for new creative talent, not just within design, but also within 3D modeling and visualization. But that's it for now. From that side, enjoy the conversation with Ben. And of course, as always, if you like this podcast and this episode in particular, give us 5 stars on iTunes or any kind of rating that you might be using. If you have any questions, do contact us on the general social media outlets with the connective point at Concept House, and let us know if you have any further questions. Now let's move on. Let's start the show. Enjoy. Ben Nauka, welcome to the show, and thanks for taking the time for having this little conversation with me. It's a pleasure, and we've been planning this for such a long time. This is going to be a good one. So I do appreciate we're sitting here at, like, you know, just 8:30 in the evening. So thank you very much for taking the time, and welcome to this episode of the Gestalten podcast.
Thanks, Martin. My pleasure likewise. Happy that it finally happens.
Indeed. So we have to say, obviously, we've known each other for quite a long time already. We had a lot of conversations over the past years, I would have to say. And there's one topic that we want to talk about today, which is design and the idea of business behind it. So not necessarily just about, you know, design as a supplier or something like that, but really design as part of a grander business, mm-hmm. because you have a little bit of experience with that. But before we jump into that topic, how about you tell our listeners just a tiny little bit of your background, where you've studied, and of course, how long you have been in your current position at Borgward?
All right. So, well, my name is Benjamin Nauka, and I'm the chief designer of the Borgward Group. I'm in this position since June 2012 already, so quite a while. And I was classically studying transportation design at Pforzheim University, and had a chance during the studies to work and live abroad in the US twice, in the greater Los Angeles area and in Taiwan, Taipei. So got a little bit of a sneak peek into international culture and other co-working, and got addicted to that. And I think looking at my position today was a very helpful experience.
And so from your personal experience, you have not just been with an OEM before, but you've also started off your career at a supplier. So you have both the experience of really working as a supplier as well as from the OEM side, which I think nowadays is quite unique. It's not necessarily the normal way of doing things, if I can remember. Most of the car designers jump right into the OEM culture.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I started my career at Mercedes-Benz Technology, which is now AKKA, and was very, very helpful because at that time there was, like today, a little bit of a crisis going on, and the positions at OEMs were not existent. Still, this was a good way to go to a company which is very closely attached to an OEM, which actually was a part of the OEM Daimler AG at that time. And seeing the business side from a supplier side is very helpful because you see how crucial time, budget, team coordination is, and delivering also results which are of interest to the customer. And at the same time, you know, I was already at the position also working on the OEM side as well. It's like seeing, okay, how is it perceived? You know, how does it, you know, just come over the fence? And where is the chances and risks to get it shown and accepted, or how to approach the right people to get heard?
So this is obviously a very interesting background, and that's why we decided as well to talk about. And you know, we will in the long term make a little bit of a series out of this with other people talking about the idea about business and design as well. But if we start off with your current kind of position, so chief designer at Borgward. And obviously, you have a studio in Germany. You're very well connected and very much connected with your Chinese colleagues, of course, as well. What do you think in these kind of grander schemes of companies, what is for the non-design person design, and how is it being perceived in general from your personal experience?
It's one word. It's just taste. It's personal taste, actually. Two words. If as a non-designer, you are a decision maker, all you can do, and there's nothing wrong about it, is judging by your personal taste and by the person's and experiences around you. So if you know that, it helps you a lot as a designer, as a creative guy who wants to push, you know, for beauty, as an example, or for a unique design. It's really helpful if you know that to understand feedback and also to react to feedback or comments.
And how do you address these kind of people? I mean, is there a different kind of way of talking to them, or is there, you know, trying to educate them on how design works, or what is the general kind of way? I think, you know, what, let's say 80-90% of the car design chiefs would do, and how would they communicate with these top levels?
Well, I think one of the most important things is patience. Because I don't think there is a golden way to catch your decision maker to make a decision in your favor or into the direction you would like to pursue. I have the joy to have quite a lot of different high-level decision makers to present to, and I had the chance to learn from them, but also to adapt to them. And this is also one thing which you need to learn, is that you need to grab everyone a little differently. You know, everybody is an individual person, and there is decision makers, billionaires, who are completely design driven and still don't know how a design process, car design process especially, you know, is being lived. On the other hand, you have just people who look for money and for a brand name and just let things go. Without making a proper judgment if this is the right for the brand. So it's a lot of conversation. It's a lot of trial and error. It's a lot of repetition of topics that you think you are important. And it's also a lot of compromise. And the artist to find your own level of compromise.
Okay, so let's talk about this compromise a little bit. Like, how do you achieve that? I mean, you know, you as the designer, you understand the process, but when the stakeholder comes and does a review with you and just doesn't have the ability of communicate why they like something, just to say like, oh, I like this better. How can you, what can you do to make an actual business decision out of this? Because otherwise it's just taste, you know, it's just like, oh, I like this, I like that. But can, you know, do these people also understand that just based on taste, they cannot risk, let's say, you know, a $1 billion budget just to do a car?
Yeah, in the ideal case, you have done a lot of pre-presentation work with your colleagues from the engineering department, from the marketing department, and from the finance department, because at the end, you have a couple of proposals, let's say ABC, and you would like to have a decision on that. And as a professional designer, you should be able to also answer the questions of, oh, have you checked that with the marketing team? You know, and what's their response? And have you probably done a internal survey or clinic before, or even a professional customer clinic to check if a new brave approach is being accepted or not? So at the end, you should have just a couple of proposals on the wall, which should satisfy the designer's dream, vision, of the brand, of the product. At the same time, you should be very much aware, maybe more aware than the classic OEM, how sensible people are to costs, to timings, and also, especially when it comes to brief decisions, how to get people into a certain comfort zone with an uncomfortable question or decision.
And how would you usually do that? Is that literally just because of a presentation, or would you push people towards these kind of situations from a design perspective, or do you have to be careful of just like making, you know, maybe only doing that once so that you're not pissing off your decision makers too much?
It's a little bit dependent on the time you have, but usually, if there's time, it's step by step. It's like launching a rocket, you know, there's like the first, the second, the third step. And, it's like because, you know, if you don't succeed in the first step, you know, things are getting more complicated in the second and maybe impossible in the third step. So, in the ideal case, in the ideal time plan, you have multiple chances to present your ideas and your dreams, your visions to the decision maker, because then you also have a chance to understand his or her thinking and his or her feedback, because we need to also understand that feedback from these people is very don't get me wrong, it's like in a very simple way, you know, they don't own the design language. They don't know what stance is, you know, or they don't really understand what is the math behind as an example. So you need to tell them, you said it in the beginning, educational way, what is stance. And if you really figure out if this is one of your key features of your car and they don't get it, then you need to just go a step back and, you know, just say, okay, let me give you a couple of examples. You know, this is the benchmark. This is a good stance. This is a bad stance, you know, and what should we do in our cars to improve as an example? So it's a lot of showing examples, showing, benchmarking, you know, I mean, especially Chinese companies are very much into benchmarking, but not in the way that, we look as a designers, especially to the cars which are on the market. Mm-hmm. That's maybe just a proof of concept, but, also, you know, convincingly, what is a trend and what is the upcoming trends? And especially if you talk about upcoming trends, you need to take the lead sometimes and just tell them, okay, guys, there is a car show coming up, or there is a new product just being presented, you know, or there is a trade show like the CES coming up. So maybe if you have time, let's wait another week or two. Let's go there together, have a look, and then make a judgment again.
How do these guys react to that? I mean, like, you know, it's for me in that kind of sense, what the experience that I've had a lot is when the designer feels comfortable and, you know, also let's say sees himself in a certain kind of position of power because he can talk in a language that not everybody understands. You know, it usually ends badly for them. Because if you have a CEO on your side that doesn't necessarily understand what you're talking about, the likeliness that person is going to say no is going to be much higher. So how do they react to when you say like, oh, let's go to the show. Let us show you what the future is. Or like, you know, let us show you what these kind of new trends are. Can you, it's almost like, you know, seduce them to become interested in design without making too many, you know, or impactful decisions in very early stages where you say, let us work this. Because I see the problem oftentimes is that there's either too much involvement of high level management or not just enough, because then they don't know what's happening.
It's not necessarily seducing the high level guys. It's really catching the right moment and trying to understand their situation. I'm also trying to put myself into their position to make a decision on something which has a big impact on the success of the brand and of the product. So there is a moment where you can just say to stay to the example, let's go to a show, have a look, you know. But if it's clearly like, oh, they would lose their face right now because there's too many people staying around, you know, I would just not ask this question in this particular meeting, but try to get this chance afterwards. Especially also in the Asian Chinese culture, you know, what is being made before and after the meetings sometimes is even more important than within the meetings. So, in this respect, it's just trying to just tell them, you know, let me help you to make a better decision. You know, let me just help you to make a better way of also giving feedback from your side, because it's not just their design understanding. Sometimes it's also just language, even if you have a translator. You know, we have had just to give an example feedback of, you know, this headlamp looks shit, you know. And by shit, you don't mean it's a shitty headlamp. It's just like they didn't like a particular detail about that. But all they didn't know is like how to express that. So before saying nothing or before not approving something, they just say, that's what I don't like, basically. So.
And how do you designers deal with that? I mean, if you're in a review, and obviously you're used to that because you've been with the company for a certain amount of time, you do understand what technically it means. It's almost like reading in between the lines. But when you have your designers that are not communicating with these kind of top level management every single day, how do you prepare them for that? How do you prepare them for this hardcore business side of not just having a nice sketch over here and talk about, you know, cool things and creative things all day, but really bringing down the numbers in that sense? Are they receptive to that? Are there guys who are just like, I don't even want to be in there because I have absolutely no interest in that? Or what is your experience of the, let's say, average designer that you have worked with when it comes to these business made decisions? And do they respect them? Or do they even say just like, oh, they have no idea?
No, I think that's a crucial part of also leading a team and to generate continuous good input from the team, because the decision-making process is very complicated. It's very complex. And as you say, a junior designer, you know, who's just probably stepping into the business, or even a senior designer, which has worked in a very structured environment before, doesn't know how decisions are being made in a different environment. And my strategy always is to talk to the team beforehand, and especially if there's newcomers into the team, telling them, okay, this is our culture, this is the decision-making process, this is how usually feedback is being given, this is how we react. And if this word or that word is being dropped, that means, you know, do or don't. A classic example is if someone from the top management says, I have a suggestion, you know, this means do it. Yeah, it's not a suggestion. Yeah. I mean, do it, you know. And so this kind of transparency, this kind of just trying to give an insight in how a presentation will look like, helps to also make the designers more happy. Because also it happens quite often, actually, that the proposal which the designer believes is really good and I believe is really good just kicks out. And then it comes back to the management to put it back into the game. You know, that's probably one of the advantages in this kind of environment, that if something gets deselected, you will have chances, if you do it quite smartly, to get those proposals back into the game, and not just once, but maybe even twice or three times. So it's this kind of openness from both sides that needs to be respected. And it's but also a question for me of politeness. This is what I also asked at the beginning, was how pushy, basically, you know, do you need to be as a designer or design chief to get a decision made? You know, I mean, there's plenty of good designers out there who are very pushy, very kind of demanding their decisions, kind of take it or leave it style. And this for sure is something which does not work in a Chinese or Asian way.
It only works with a, let's say, if you have a certain standing, I think, on the highest levels as well. I would even say, like, on, let's say, you know, Western soil, if you are too pushy, it only works if you really have the full trust of the board. Like, you know, if you can back it up in such a high level that you can do almost whatever you want and you will get the backing. but it doesn't necessarily happen very often. I from at least my personal experience in that sense. But how do you prepare your colleagues for something like that? Because I had a conversation with Lutz Fügener, and we were talking about the head of a bachelor's degree at the University of Pforzheim for transportation design, and he said, you know, we're obviously trying to get our students to understand the entire design process much more, and that design is not necessarily just about, you know, creating or doing 3D models, but there's a business aspect to it, there's a marketing aspect to it, there's an engineering aspect to it. When, you know, students come up to you, or like, you know, graduates starting with you, do you think those guys really have an understanding what this business is all about? Do you personally think that they know what design is, or do you think they're still artists? And how can you train them?
I'd say that most of them are artists in a positive way. This kind of very, let's say, positive in the early stage. Because it's always kind of a little bit like a wake-up call, or this just general questioning of, why do you do it like this? You know, why does it look like that? You know, and can't we do this differently? I think those questions are very important, and we should ask them day by day. On the other hand, when it comes to timings, to deliveries, to presentations, and to translation a sketch into a model, a lot of training is necessary. Because a sketch, I always say this also to my leadership when I kind of discuss with them what they see on the wall. So this is the best you can get. You know, maybe an excellent Maya model will do a similar job, but, you know, a very nice sketch, you know, with a very, very strong theme. And this is the nicest of the car you will ever see. Everything afterwards will just get step by step worse. So this is also what a junior designer needs to understand. And my recipe is to give them as soon as possible guidance, you know, either by a senior designer or a lead designer, or just let them translate your sketch onto a package. You know, if you have a production car, of course you make a lot of great sketches, but translating your sketch then at the end to something which is potentially a meter slimmer on the inside, on the interior, and has a lot bigger steering wheel and shifter envelopes and lever envelopes and airbag positions. If at least someone was running through this process at once, I think the understanding is there. And without that, it's difficult to let junior designers understand what this business is about.
Do you personally think that somebody can learn to become, I would say, a manager, understanding the idea of the business aspect, the corporate levels? Do you think somebody can learn that, or do you think somebody's almost like born into it?
That's probably need a quantification to that. But I think you can learn it. I think it's a little bit dependent on your attitude, because you need to understand that a car is a very, very complex product, that the development time is fairly long, that you have to put together a lot of pieces, and that design is just one of many, many departments which is included into making this happen. And this is the first and the crucial understanding of how things got together. You know, back at my first job, you know, I was partly responsible, let's put it this way, for the design strategy of the current GLC and the C-Class as an example. And I was running into those Thursday meetings, 8 hours, 9 hours in a row, just sitting together with everybody. From the engine, from the aerodynamics, from the wheels, from the finance, from the dealers, that give continuous feedback back and forth. And just by sitting in there for half a year, you know, or even longer, I was learning so much about what a car is about. And I also heard the other's opinion about design. And I could also learn, you know, quickly what design needed to do to get heard. And I think this is something which will help every designer to understand, okay, the complexity of a product like the car shouldn't be underestimated. I mean, nothing is wrong to be an artist. Nothing is wrong of dreaming big, but you should always understand also the task and the role you are given. You know, if you get asked to make something fancy, do it, you know. But if you get asked make a mainstream car and you try to make a spaceship out of that, you will fail.
Yeah, and you will very likely get a lot of issues within the companies as well. Let's put it that way, because you know it's everybody's sure. Is going left and you're going right. I mean, this in certain instances can help you and your career, of course, but in oftentimes there's a reason why a company goes towards the left or towards the right, and it wants everybody to push into one direction. I think that's always important to remember. Now, when we talk about these developments and really understanding what it means to move into management, when was the first time when you realized that your life is now depending a bit more on Excel sheets rather than on sketches that you have done yourself?
Basically, already at the MB Tech in the first part of my career, because I was moving up fairly fast, and Excel sheets was almost from the beginning part of my education. I'm still not a fan of Excel sheets, to be honest. I'm still not a big fan of PowerPoint. I prefer Photoshop and sketch modeling and frame modeling above all. But I also learned that this, for certain people, is the right and only right tool to communicate. If you make, let's put it this way, for instance, timing plans, you know, if there is a system behind that, our company is using Excel in this case, not a specific program for that. So, it's of course extremely helpful if you know how this program works and how you can edit it and how you can just delete stuff, blah, blah. And at the same time, if you have a cost structure of your car, you know, and get together all the BOM costs, it's helpful if you can read an Excel sheet where all this is inside to understand, okay, where is a potential cost cutting position, which will affect the design. So I figured out that this is a tool which I need to understand, know, and use fairly soon, and still doing it. However, there is fortunately a design management departments and program management departments which are taking the lead on that and put in your comments.
Meanwhile, but do you think that, you know, for to build this kind of next step of a design generation, do you believe that they should become less caring about, let's say, numbers, about budgets, or do you think they should actually become more caring about these things? Because with, you know, the way I see it is, it seems like things become easier because you can just almost go to like an Amazon style marketplace and buy your components. So you know exactly what your components are. You can go to companies such as Volkswagen and ask them to use their platform. And, you know, they probably even help you to engineer the entire thing. So it seems to me that the knowledge a designer has to build for the future is becoming much more, and they need to understand much more about the process of actually building a car without going into too much detail of this. I mean, this is what I find interesting in this current kind of climate that we have with electrification, with autonomous driving, the digitalization that comes into everything, is that it's almost like a Lego puzzle, and you just need to understand like how I can manipulate these Lego bricks to build something that is, let's say, physically or even digitally much more attractive and much more aesthetic than, you know, maybe what the original instruction was like.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the budgets which we had in the past for developing a car will be continuously cut, because the competitiveness, the price competition on the market, and also the offers for the customers are huge. And it's not just helpful for the company if the designer understands at least a little bit, let's say more than the basics of the cost structure of the car, because it will also help the designer to focus. It's like if you have a certain amount of budget for your, let's say, exterior, and you are really well into a certain detail, let's say a laser light or a some illuminated surface and blah blah, then you need to know how much does it cost. And if you know that, you should try to figure out, okay, how much of that the overall budget, which is being approved already, is it? And then you can make a decision on your own. How important is it for you to fight for it? hardcore, you know, until the end, because maybe if you save that feature, you can get bigger rims or more detailed grill insert or a more fancy door handle or no mirrors, blah, blah, you know. So it helps you to balance also what is really important, you know, what is which feature, which theme, which element is something that is so important for my design that I cannot compromise on that.
And who makes that decision? Is that decision being made on the highest level? Is that, you know, made by you? Is that made by the team? Because obviously, like, if you want to, you know, it's almost like taking, you know, the lollipop away from a kid, with the kid as the designer. They obviously don't want to lose anything. So how is that decision being made on what is priority?
In the ideal case, it's that the first step is a designer. And it's not necessarily like taking away lollipop, because at the end, it's the step before. It's like you have public pocket money, you have your €2, and how you want to spend it. You know, you can probably buy 5 pieces of chocolate or 1 giant lollipop. So in this respect, I think the first step is really the designer. And maybe he needs help in making a decision, or maybe he is so convincing that he says, okay, let's try to convince our leadership to spend some extra money on that. And this is when the management pops in to say, okay, if someone convinces, you know, classically the management, if this is a good idea, I'm all in for fighting for it. You know, I'm very supportive, and I really try to really listen to the story, to understand also the purpose of the design. And if it's really good, and if you say it's going to really help the brand, the car, the product to stand out in the crowd, then we go all the way to the other management levels to fight for it.
I find this so interesting, because, you know, we're talking about this creative process that becomes almost like a bureaucratic decision making, and obviously that is very much, you know, oftentimes it's not democratic. It's it's probably more the opposite of it, but. Let me ask you this straight up, and, you know, obviously I understand if you maybe don't want to answer this, but is your job, like, you know, more fulfilling when smaller things happen, or do you think it's oftentimes, you know, seeing just the final product and seeing what you were able to put into it, really the point where you say, this is what we're working for? Because I, you know, on these every single day, small disappointments, but they can rack up, and you don't obviously want to make sure that your people around them getting frustrated by that. But how do you keep them going with these kind of ideas? Because especially what you just mentioned, the budgets are being, you know, made smaller and smaller and smaller. And what do you do in that kind of circumstances, not just to become a little, let's say, internal supplier, but really being an important team of shaping the company?
It's willing to answer this question, of course. It's a little bit of both, I would say. I mean, of course, all the small little steps, all the small little achievements make me happy. Because if you go through a couple of programs, which I did in the past, you know, you really see how difficult it is sometimes to just get a decision through. And if there was just, let's say, 8 out of 10 of your fantastic ideas just got killed, there's two ways. Either you appreciate that at least 2 made it, or you're completely frustrated that the 8 got killed. And here again, it comes to the repetition. I've had so many situations that in the early stages of a project, good ideas got killed because of taste, of budget, of bad, you know, presentation, maybe communication or understanding, maybe a mixture of everything. And just in the right moment, you sneak it back in, you pop it in, because someone is asking the right question. You said, see, we got that. We have an answer here. And then you have a big impact again. So this is also what I tell the designers and the design team is like, if something gets deselected or not selected to the extent you would like to have, it's of course a mischance, but it's not a dead end. You know, it's something which maybe for this program or for this facelift, or even just for this model year update, didn't go through. But maybe, and we had this many, many times, you know, it's coming back with the next program, with the next project. You know, I've had topics 5 years ago, I tell you, 6 years ago, where we really wanted to push in things, and this was really frustrating. We didn't get it. And now we all get them now. Because now time proved that, yeah, it's right. You know, if this is a conundrum concept, that this is a special treatment of light, you know, all those things which were predictable for design a couple of years before, now find their way into our production course. So it's the satisfaction needs a little bit more time potentially.
Well, but you know, in the end, if you look into even the biggest ones over here in Europe and in the US, either the best concepts come out in the shortest amount of time, you know, or it just needs to be proven over time. That's the way it is. Or you need to have a pressure situation. I think if you look into Volkswagen in particular, that pressure situation of now going into electric vehicles, have probably kept them a little bit more on their toes and on their feet, than they maybe would have done over the past 10, 15 years, in terms of, you know, bringing something new to the table just because they had to. And obviously Tesla plays a role in that as well, into that kind of direction. Now, when we really look into these kind of decision-making processes and understanding how, you know, design is becoming part of the entire business unit, in a corporation, can be small, can be big. What do you think, from maybe your own experience, but also maybe from looking, you know, from the outside into other companies, where do you think designers should take more responsibility, or should kind of step up within the business? I mean, is there any, you know, like in reviews, of course, but do you think designers should also have a much bigger impact on business decisions being made? You know, we're talking about, you know, user experience a lot at the moment, which always is interested because of, sometimes it is within a design department, sometimes it's a different department, sometimes it's with marketing. So it seems like there's a lot of opportunity out there, but I sometimes have the feeling that maybe a lot of the design departments are not really interested in taking that responsibility in the higher level of a business.
They should. It's a very clear statement from my side. It's like, you know, you can't complain about not getting heard, and you can't complain about not getting your design through if you missed the chance to make yourself noticed. There's so much evidence out there that successful design helps to elevate the brand in terms of brand recognition, brand perception, you know, image elevation, and so on and so forth. So I encourage actually also my people to go into dialogue, to really check with marketing, check with the engineers, check with the finance guys regularly, you know, internally in the team, you know, cross-divisional, interior, exterior, HMI, or user experience, you know, just, you know, talk to each other, you know, have a look, you know, just check on your idea and then check, you know, if it's still lasts after you talked to those people already. And I think also on the broader picture of the company, I think it's very, very important that people understand the individual needs of each department, because at the end, we shouldn't forget that who's paying our salaries is the cars which are on the market and being sold. You know, it's not necessarily your VP or the president. It's overall the sales of your product. And for that, I'm a big fan of, you know, cross-divisional cooperation, to just say, guys, we need to make sure that we are on the same page. Ideally, the ideal presentation to a president or chairman is to say, okay, here you have a couple of proposals. It's completely cross-checked with all the necessary departments. So all the questions you normally have are already asked. So you just need to make a decision to A, B, or C. You know, they are all within the finance, within the timing, within the target group, within the marketing strategy, and so on and so forth. So, this is the responsibility of the design, and also design. At least that's my subjective perception. You know, we are kind of a knot point in big corporations. You know, because we have so much interaction with all those departments. You know, we have such an insight into the companies, and we are involved in so many strategic and early decisions that this is a chance which a designer should grab to promote their thinking, their ideas, their knowledge into what's next. Because, I mean, that's the biggest question for all companies. You know, what's next? What's the next big thing? If you don't know what it is, sorry, it's like just Can we at least be a fast follower to that?
Yeah.
To not lose
grip. Do you think that the design department will change towards other ideas as well? I mean, I'm thinking currently a lot about this idea about, you know, business design in that sense. So that you're not just designing a product or, you know, you're designing a screen or something like that, but you're helping to really design a service, you know, maybe a new business model that the company could follow through. So usually, you know, things that's being done in certain kind of departments, but it seems to me that design is so early in the process of developing a product or, you know, an experience that it almost becomes natural. Why not, you know, build on new business models in the future as well? It seems a little bit far-fetched at the moment, especially in the car industry, but it could certainly be the case that, you know, somebody in your position might have a team leader or a chief under him or her who is then in charge of, you know, the haptic design. Then you have the business design, you have experience design, and this comes all together. Almost like the idea of a CDO, but then again, a lot of people have no idea what a CDO is actually supposed to do. But I see it very possible that we go into that kind of way if certain kind of thinking processes change or mindset change.
Fully agree. I mean, the position of to just pick this up of a CDO, I think, is something which should be incorporated into companies of any size, because this just is one of the rare chances to get really heard regularly on a high level base, which is helpful in making quick decisions, which are sometimes really necessary. To the other topic, it's for me, I'm a very true believer that the separation of exterior, interior, Kollontron, even HMI, and to a certain extent, you know, I think will disappear over the next couple of years. You know, I even made a speech to my people, and you know, I'm a promoter of the idea that, I mean, we are automotive designers firsthand, but we will develop into experience designers, because a car is part of a company or corporate experience. And we have seen, you know, with the classic, the classic examples are coming, like Apple, you know, that the product is one important part of it, but it's not the start at the end. You know, it's one piece of the big puzzle. And I think that here a designer is a very useful, almost tool for a company to check how big this puzzle is and how big the pieces that design can cover actually is, because I think it's many. And also in the car design, you know, it's like a exterior designer should know about interior design, should know about color trim, because I think those last two disciplines are gaining up speed dramatically, if not even overruling. And user experience, of course, I mean, what makes the customer happy? It's, of course, a nice-looking car. It's, of course, a sensation of beauty. But at the end, he will also say, this was a nice experience. You know, not just by looking at it, but just by, how you say, feeling it, driving it, you know, smelling it, hearing it, interacting with it.
What's your personal opinion about collaborations? Obviously, you mentioned already internal collaborations with other departments just to get better decision making for, you know, the decision takers in that sense. But where do you see something, you know, such as different companies combining their strengths? And I'm talking about maybe a car company with a tech company that is obviously happening to a certain degree already, but car company and a service company, all these kind of things coming together and building new ideas from a creative perspective. So far, it seems over the past 10, 15 years, obviously, you know, the car industry was strong enough. Somebody would maybe even say arrogant enough to say we do everything we do in-house. But it seems that in this current climate that we have, in the development that we have, partnering will be an essential point. And that also means that opening up your design, not just literally in terms of opening your doors because you have to collaborate, but also asking your designers and your design staff to think differently about certain things.
Absolutely. I think collaboration will be essential in the future. First of all, because the product or the components are getting much more complex and also complicated, literally, in the development. Not necessarily in the product you see at the end, but the whole way until it's being ready to use. This is very complex. You know, I think one of the best examples is the whole HMI system in the car. You can make in-house developments. You can make your own maps. You can make your own operating system if you want. But then you need to know, okay, how much effort it is to make an integration of all the other operating systems, you know, with all the other mobile devices. And it's such a simple sentence in the past years, you know, oh, we just integrate all of our mobile devices into the car. But it doesn't seem to be that easy, funnily, you know. And in this respect, I think I'm always looking to aviation industries a little bit. It's like, you know, at the end, if you are an aviation company, you know, an airline brand, you know, you're also recognized for your soft services, for your product, you know, for your booking experience, for your flight experience, for the friendliness of staff and so on and so forth. And the seats which you have in your aircraft, you buy them at Recaro or at another company. You know, it's not that they develop them on their own. Not even Airbus are doing or Boeing are doing that. You know, so it's kind of collaboration. In fashion is happening as well. You know, Rimowa, Dior just launched a suitcase thing. I think it's part of the future of the car design business, and I also believe it's really beneficial for both sides. Because you visited potentially CES as well. It's like you see that the tech companies are moving into automotive, and automotive are moving into tech. So if you just make cherry picking on both sides, I think this makes.
Is the car industry or the car design industry actually ready for that, or is it still? I don't want to say living under a rock, but is it still compared to the tech industry behind, and you know needs to change something?
Difficult to judge because I don't have insight into a lot of OEMs. I think it's really dependent on the company culture, you know. And it's also dependent on if there is a slogan in the company, let's say, yeah, we open up, yeah, we speed up, yeah, let's be more techy. Mm. It's really being lived because, you know, talking is one thing, acting is the other. And let's put it this way. I think there is companies outside where there is an understanding that they need to really speed up, you know, look around, you know, partner up with tech companies and at least try to look for synergies to make the product more competitive. And there's others who say, okay, we try to do this in-house because we do have the budgets. We do want to protect our intellectual property, which is not to be underestimated, I have to say. But you get a feeling, let's put it this way, if you have some talks on the designer's night, that there is room for improvement.
I certainly believe there is room for improvement. And I think that this would even start with the fact, you know, very simple kind of direction is like hiring different people. I mean, it starts already. We see that especially when in the digital space, you know, UX, UI, people that have never had any contact with the car industry before, now work in the car industry. But I think it also goes into, especially in interiors, color and trim has always been like, you know, fashion involved, of course, but especially in interiors where you can see more and more people from a product background and industrial background making a comeback, you know, in going into car design in particular, or mobility design, because it becomes almost like, people want to have these kind of standardized systems oftentimes just to make it quicker, you know, maybe to work towards a time frame of a product. You know, we had a conversation with Sonny Lim from Puma recently, and he talked to us about that the fashion process that they have is 6 months. Now, obviously, if you can do that in the car industry, that would be, you know, incredible, like doing a new interior every 6 months. But it almost seems like something like this has to happen because the demand that you see in particular in China, where, you know, the speed of a new car, like the facelift comes like a year later already, is almost on that level. You know what I mean? So like, it seems like something does need to change, not just on the digital space, what Tesla is doing, where they upgrade and update your infotainment system, or like, you know, HMI system very regularly, but almost at, you know, on your car side as well, on your haptic side.
Absolutely. And I think this is also a big point for the residual value of a car, because if you have a look 20 years back from now, you know, where do you see the most that the cars are old is because of technology, because it's what they use in the interior. There's cassette players, there are still CD players, there is 5-inch navigation screens with bad resolution and 256 colors. No matter how beautiful the shape around is, no matter how great your Poltrona Frau leather is, you know, this makes your car look old immediately, and this has a complete big impact on the decision making process of buying probably a used car, even a new car, you know, for the customer, because the strive for continuous updating, for being, you know, on the edge continuously, you know, it's not the vast majority of the customers potentially, but still it's very helpful. And if you understand that your product needs to be, let's put it kind of update ready from the beginning, the designer should also think very smartly to see how we can achieve that. You know, it's like how we can achieve, you know, with our platform supplier, you know, for the HUX screen and for the head unit, you know, for instance, how we can ensure that in 2-3 years we are still on par, you know, or is my design allowing exchanging maybe the screen to a better OLED or whatever 4K solution, you know, during a service or for the second part of their life cycle, you know. So I think this kind of tech thinking is very important for the designers to understand, and not just on the hardware side, but also on the software side, of course.
Last question based on this, and then I'll get you the, you know, everybody gets the big three questions in the end, but but kind of finishing this topic off, and a little bit more speculative for the future. Do you think that the current transportation/mobility design student is prepared for these changes, or do you think the industry needs to do more to prepare them for these changes? Do you think it's an educational system, or it should be an industry led approach?
I think also both, because like with any educational part, I think over the years you need to adapt. I think the industry should make people aware in their internships, especially, or when they have cooperation projects with the universities, to say, okay, let you think about that, you know, how you can make your product attractive 20 years down the road. Well, what's your answer to that? And at the same time, also the universities can ask their students, okay, based on your knowledge, because this is more probably from the customer point of view, what do you think is appropriate? Which is the appropriate steps or measures or actions to make it happen that, you know, 20 years down the road, your design is not just being perceived as beautiful and well-proportioned, but also still modern, still usable. Because, you know, you can't expect from a student that he goes to the CES or to whatever, some tech shows, South by Southwest, those things, you know, which are really, really inspiring, potentially more than any car show, unfortunately. But this is again where the companies could jump in. But I think it's really both. It's you're really making aware our young talents, and there are out there so many, you know. Keep track, stay up, you know, just look around the corners. Don't just think car, think really the big experience. Think how your car, your design is part of a big, fantastic puzzle. And without your piece, it's not a nice puzzle. And just your puzzle is not complete, you know. So disrespect, I think this is the thinking.
That's a nice little word to end the conversation. So Ben, already, thank you very much for taking the time. But as mentioned before, I let you go. You will get three questions from me. And I know you have heard these questions before because you've listened to one or two episodes of the podcast. So question number one, being asked to anybody, and obviously can be, doesn't have to be a car project, can be pretty much anything. So which project that you did not participate in would you have absolutely loved to be a part of?
Oh, almost any.
Yes.
No, really, I admire his cars. It's like, really, hands down to those guys. It's a fantastic brand. It's fantastic looking cars. And let's put it as say, almost every Aston Martin I see from the beginning of the brand is something which I really like.
All right. Question number two. Which is in your perspective, and this can be somebody you have worked with or have not worked with, it doesn't really matter, the most influential designer that has impacted you as a person and in your profession?
Should I drop names or not?
You can literally just, you can say one person, two people. I don't care. Just to give us a little bit of an idea, you know, where your thinking process and obviously your creativity is coming from.
Yeah. There's I think, immediately 3 to 4 persons which really influenced me. And I'm so thankful for them, and the people know who I'm talking about. You know, maybe I can put it this way. There's someone from the Volkswagen Audi side I'm very thankful for. There's someone who is on the very responsible position at Kia at the moment, which I'm very thankful for his comments and his just, you know, dialogues. And those people I'm referring to are those kind of designers which are on high level positions in the design OEM world, and even also on the tier one world, which are still nice persons and still obviously are able to lead a team without being an asshole. Sorry for that.
let me put one extra question into that. Coming back to our topic in the beginning, who was the one you've learned the most about the business side and not just about the creative side? Who was that person where you said, you know, understanding business, that guy is somebody who really affected me and especially what we're working in?
This, interestingly, I would say someone from the tier one supplier. This is not the tier one kind of world where I was working in, which was already helpful, but this is someone from another big tier one supplier. And if you see how he acts, how he's traveling all the time to just get things done and to just, you know, see how he gets, you know, within timings and budgets, you know, a certain project made, I think that's very insightful and admirable, and is probably also underestimated by many people out there.
All right. Now, last but not least, if I would give you any money whatsoever, which car would you buy?
I think this is the most unfair question. And I stick to that, because whenever you're asking this question, I was thinking how you can make a choice. It's mission impossible. I mean, at the end, because I am a fan of Aston Martin, I would buy probably a 177.
Oh wow!
Because I think it's a collectible. It's not the classic Aston Martin, you know. But I think it's a standalone piece, and I would not regret my decision in this case rather than on another car. But again, I would beat Jay Leno in his garage if I had the money. So,
well, this is the thing, you know. It's oftentimes what you know, just in like a retrospect. Obviously, people talking after the recording of the show. A lot of them is like, oh, you know, should I have taken this kind of car or that kind of car? And it's oftentimes what I realize is the gut feeling. It's just like the one that comes to mind first. It's not necessarily the one that, if you think about it for 5, 10, 15 minutes, like the one that you would actually buy. But there's obviously an emotional factor to that, you know, and everybody who says this kind of first car, there is some kind of emotion with that. It doesn't matter what it is, but that's what I find the interesting part of it. You know, it's almost like you can't really compare and, you know, prepare for the question properly, because once you start thinking about it for too long, then it's exactly that point. It's like, shit, there's like 15.
I wasn't. Exactly, but still, maybe as the last sentence, you can add one. It's a Boeing 747. So
okay, fair enough. That's obviously a mobility space as well. I'll take that all day long. Ben, I do really much appreciate the time. Thank you very much for doing this with me, and thank you very much for joining us. And of course, dear people listening to this, you can always connect with Ben. We will do that in the show notes as well on LinkedIn. He's always open to have, you know, an exchange with people. I can tell you that from my own experience. Otherwise, we would have never gotten in touch properly. And so if you have any questions to him, let him know. Send him a quick message. The same obviously goes for me. But once again, Ben, thank you very much. And to all of our listeners, you will hear from us very soon again with another lovely conversation with somebody out of the design industry.
Thank you, Marty, my pleasure. And hope to see you soon again.
We will arrange that, don't worry.
All right.